Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I'm your host, as always, Stephen Murphy, joined with the regular rugby crew of Sam and Westy. For those listening who can't see this, a lot of shoulders on show. Not for me, my two accompanying guests are rocking sleeveless vests. And I don't know how to feel about it, but we'll talk about it. Before we get stuck into the rugby, let's, as always, check in. Sam, how are you? How are your shoulders?
I'm rocking the shoulders because it's hot as balls. We're getting this 2-day summer. It's been nice.
I know. I hope you used it wisely.
Oh, yeah. My shoulders are out. I was walking around. I was wearing a basketball jersey. You'll be proud of me. I was wearing my Chicago Bulls Crawford jersey.
Jamal.
Yeah.
Nice. Dropped a 50-point game in that jersey, so he did.
I Googled it just to make sure, you know, it wasn't some reject. And I was like, okay, I know a little bit.
He's good. He was good.
Yeah, but see, like, I'm a Philadelphia fan when it comes to American sports. I just decided that's my city outside of rugby, where I'm a big Utah Warriors guy. But
Shout out Paul Mullen.
That's it. But yeah, Philadelphia is my city. But then I have classic, you know, that Michael Jordan old school 90s red, but like Crawford jersey. I was like, okay, I'll just wear that because it's badass, in fairness. But I have a few basketball jerseys my dad got me over years of tour and kind of going in and out of basketball arenas and working in them and stuff. So none of them are Philadelphia ones, unfortunately. It's annoying. But I don't even think that the Sixers jersey is that nice.
No, it's not. It's not great. What I like about it, when I see basketball jerseys out and about, I don't, if I see like a Jordan one or a Curry one, I'm always like, okay, whatever. It's the weird ones that I draw my attention to. So if I saw a Crawford Bulls one, I'd be like, okay, that guy knows what he's doing. You know what I mean?
Extra strange is that one that I gave you that I happened to have two of.
Latrell Sprewell.
Yeah. I don't know why I had two of them, but
Latrell got hot in the 90s for a little bit, possibly 80s. I'm not sure. I think it was 90s, but I have that, still have that Knicks jersey, yeah, that you gave me, which is I do love. I still cherish.
He jumped around. I believe he jumped around Eastern Europe for a while as well.
Probably, yeah. I bought a Chicago Bulls Dwayne Wade jersey for him, and he was there for like 2 years, which is still pretty sweet. I still have that. Very good. Westy, throwing over to you, Westy, who's currently eating a pizza as we record here.
Do you have a little world of your own? That's what I want to know.
Westy was at Westlife. Westy Life.
Westy Life.
Westy Life, yeah.
Happened at the weekend. Westy, tell us all about it.
It was an experience, to say the least. It was a really enjoyable concert for a lot of reasons, but you also get left kind of disappointed. I've been with my girlfriend for a long time now, and I've never made her scream like that. So, you know, it's a bit...
Yeah, there's four of them. There's only one of you. You know what I mean?
I thought you were going to say you get left a little disappointed because Brian McFadden didn't show up.
Oh, yeah, you keep waiting for it. But funny, me and Sam actually worked at the Westlife Farewell Tour back in 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
I think they stopped touring for like a year. That was their farewell tour.
And then their bank balance was like, hey guys, we should get back together.
I think I'm on the DVD for that, because they were filming the DVD and they were saying like, this, the farewell tour was in Croke Park. It's like, you know, strict as anything. Do not turn the lights on your merch stand on during the show, because it'll show up on the DVD. And then they went off and they did an encore, and then they kind of went off again. I was like, turn the lights on, boom, whole thing lit up. Then they come back on stage. I was like, oops, sorry, turn them off, up a ladder.
As many encores as you can fit. Wes, you're familiar with their songs, I assume, and stuff like that, are you?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't really say I'm a big fan necessarily, but like, it is just good crack. Like, it's one big gigantic sing song. Like, their crowd, or like, everyone is in a good form. Like, it's all positive, like pop music. So, like, and even sometimes it's more entertaining to watch the crowd around you than to actually watch the show to see what's going on.
What about Sugar Babes?
Yeah, look, it was great fun. We missed the Sugar Babes. We didn't.
Sugar Babes were the warm-up act.
Yeah, Sugar Babes were the support.
Which
act.
Of the 20 versions of Sugar Babes showed up?
No one knows.
It's like they've all been switched out at some stage or another. I don't know what's going on.
We were coming into the stadium as they were playing. So we actually didn't make it to our seats in time to see them. But no, it was a great day. It was a lovely evening for it in Dublin as well. We left early Saturday morning and it was gorgeous here in Galway. And it was kind of, it clouded over on the way to Dublin. But by the time we got out then, we went into town and we had dinner and we had a pint before the show. And like, the sun really came out. It was lovely. It was really comfortable as well, because it was a bit muggy when we got there. But no, it was a lovely evening spent. And we just got back today and went for a swim down in Furbo. Like, the weather in Galway was just unbelievable.
I drove past you in the motorway. I remember, I'm just remembering this now. Yeah, going past Athlone, drove past you. You were doing solid 90 on the motorway in the 100 zone, but I went past you. And then I was trying
90 miles per hour or kilometers per hour.
I want to point out to Sam that that part's not a motorway; it's a national road. It's a
dual carriageway. Yeah, but I was trying to slow down then to let you catch up with me, but it just didn't happen. And then I got stuck in a load of traffic outside Maynooth for ages with a big crash.
Yeah, we were saying we were crawling along there for ages.
Oh, 45 minutes to an hour, and we were in the Galway traffic going to Croke Park at the same time. So.
Yeah, all the flags and the cars.
Well, and they won. Happy days for Galway fans. My weekend was good. Yeah, I had a few pints Friday night with Sam and Westy with Sam's birthday last week, as we already documented. But we went for a few pints here in Oranmore. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Got some lovely pizza. And we had a whale of a time. I'm not going to lie, I woke up Saturday morning pretty hungover. More so than I thought I'd be. Which is a sign. I don't know if the sign of me getting old or... maybe Moretti's stronger than I think I give her credit for. I think maybe possibly both. I also want to shout out before we get started. My niece turned 7 today, I think. Should know that. So shout out to Pippa Murphy. Hope that she had a great birthday. And yeah, I think it's 7. If not, apologies. But in around that area. Right, we'll get stuck into the rugby boys. Historic win at the weekend. We are a batch of the first people to ever witness Ireland winning in New Zealand against the All Blacks. 117 years in the making, Sam. Well, let's talk about the positive before we get into any other stuff. Great win, Sam. Like, some great performances. Genuinely a great day for Irish rugby.
Yeah, really enjoyable. It was a day I was worried about it going into it because of the selection, and you kind of go, these lads need a big result here. They have to vindicate this selection, because it was a lot of criticism coming from a lot of angles. Some players, the general kind of critiques were that they shouldn't have been involved because of how poor they played the week before, rotating or injury worries and that sort of things. But in fairness to every single one of them, they stepped up and they put on an absolute show. It was a brilliant result, and really, like, it gave you a nice little lift, because I was vocally critical of the selection before, and I said that they needed a massive result to vindicate and to justify the selection, and there's every single one of them did. The lads that had poorer games the week before doubled up and had much better games. Like, I thought, Andrew Porter got 2 tries and is probably the 6th or 7th player in the man of the match list. Like, that's how good a lot of those forwards especially were. It was it was a brilliant game. It was a great result. Nice to see kind of New Zealand losing on home soil, because it kills a bit of that hoodoo around going to New Zealand. In future, it's the more results like that you get, the more belief you get, and they're going into a quarterfinal against New Zealand in the World Cup. You can now say, look, we've beaten them in Dunedin. We can do it in a quarterfinal. Like, it is possible. They're not unbeatable. They're not invincible. It just gets rid of a little bit of hoodoo there. So yeah, absolutely brilliant game.
Yeah, I think I was chatting to someone about this, Westy. I think the way I summed it up, and you can agree or disagree with this, but we now sort of have confirmed what we sort of know in the last couple of weeks and months, but Ireland on their day can now beat anyone, anywhere, any place, any time. Like, that's when it clicks and it works, we are that good.
Yeah, you can say we kind of knew that already, because look, we've beaten them now 3 times in the last 7. Well, not including this one, 3 times in the last 7 or 8 games, 4 now in the last 7, I think. And, one of those was away as well, so it's not just home. But as I said, like, massive to get that win down in New Zealand. And now to have a test series on the line is huge. But I think, yeah, as you say, it's about getting that hoodoo off your back. Like, my mind always goes back to playing them in Dublin back in, I think it was 2013 or 2014. Famous game where we were on their line with a minute to go and we were up by 5. They turned us over on their line and went the pitch, and then they had to retake the conversion because we left the line early. And if they hadn't got the conversion, would have drawn, and that would have been the first time that happened. But they got the conversion on the second attempt.
Aaron Cruden, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But I always think of that as being a perfect example of they won because we'd never beaten them. That was a hoodoo beating. They turned us over and we went, oh shit. Now, of course, fantastically talented team as well, but part of that is a lack of self-belief where you think they're going to score, so they do, and then you panic on the line and you run early because you're trying to save the draw. But I think little things like that are now going to be a distant memory, because these guys know they can beat the All Blacks anytime, any place, anywhere. on their day, of course, not every time, every place, everywhere, which is an important distinction to make. Does it make up for the loss last week? Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, we had said before that one win against someone this series is acceptable. It papers over some of the cracks, but I hope that there is still stuff to work on. Huge credit has to go to Paul O'Connell and the forwards team and the forwards coaches, because one of the things that was shored up so much was our scrum and our line out and our set. Once our set piece functioned, we saw those plays and those back moves so much easier to execute. So, I think, but coming back from a massive defeat the week before as well also puts massive confidence in the Irish team. So it's just another tick in the box as well. It's a thing that you have to get done. You have to be able to win in these places against these teams.
Yeah, Sammy sort of touched on a few of the individual performances, but I thought, obviously, from a Connacht perspective, I thought Bundy was fantastic after coming on. Mac, great to see him back in the team. And we saw, again, examples of why Andy Farrell likes him and goes with him. Coming in from into the midfield area again, getting a lot of ball, reliable under the high ball. Seems to make up yards when he has absolutely no right to make yards, which is obviously a fantastic trait to have as well. But I thought Tadhg Byrne absolutely reminded us again why, I don't know, maybe pound for pound, he's probably our best player. Like, he's just fantastic. I thought Caelan Doris had a huge game. A lot of people maybe not question his selection, but he seems to have either a fantastic man-to-match games, or he seems sometimes to be a bit in the background of games. But we saw some fantastic performances all around the pitch, and that led to the great result, didn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I think everyone stepped up. Everyone kind of worked as a unit. It looked a lot more cohesive than the week before. You do have to caveat the week before, kind of the fact that Sexton went off injured so early and Carberry came on. It didn't look as good then, and they had looked quite good before that point. So I just think that everyone did step up. I was chuffed for Bundy again. I thought he was brilliant when he came on. I think that he was rightfully getting the plaudits as well afterwards. There was a lot of people talking about how positive his impact was. Defensively, he was very sound. Offensively, he would go forward ball. He was being used very smartly as well. And then, like that, Byrne was absolutely brilliant. Doris was amazing. Peter Mahoney continues to defy logic. Like, everyone just writes him off, including me. Like, writes him off, says, oh, we need to be making way. He's not as good, but he's just, when he's on it, there's no one with a more positive impact in a game. He's just the perfect amount of dog that he can get under the skin of New Zealanders. Perfect amount of work rate. He's unbelievable in the line out. He's technical. He's a good leader. So when he is on it, he is just integral to how that team functions. He's brilliant and, you know, pulling off Fijian style offloads himself, and Tadhg Byrne just playing basketball at one point, and then big outside of the boot, 50-22. It's what a performance from him. He was my man of the match, but it would have been, you know, it's harsh on the likes of Doris or Byrne as well. Like, those two players are absolutely fantastic. And then, yeah, from a Connacht point of view, seeing Mac back, not seemingly not affected by COVID, nearly affected by a thuggish charge down, but he was really integral to the opening set of minutes. And Porter's, was it his first or second try? You get a lot of go forward ball in short, tight spaces, and he just makes things happen in a way that other, and I do prefer him on the left wing, but in a way that other right wingers don't. You know, there's a lot of right wingers that are extremely good finishers, probably a lot faster than him, probably will sneak in the corner a bit more than he will. But he just goes searching for work. He's so busybody. He's just constantly coming up in the middle of the two centers, in behind Sexton on loop plays, looking for that work and steady in the air. So good defensively. I know there was people wrongfully criticizing him for his initial selection in the Irish team, saying that he was questionable defensively. And he's just time and time again shown that was a complete nutter horseshit. So I was absolutely chuffed. And, you know, it's nice. And I'd say Ulster fans don't feel it as much as we do as Connacht fans. It's nice to have three lads being there. And I think, but like, even Finlay had a positive impact when he came on. So it's really nice to get such a historic result like that. And in years gone by, if Ireland had beaten the All Blacks away from home, there mightn't have been any Connacht players in the mix. So it's great for Connacht to have that. And then you see the picture afterwards with, like, Pete Wilkins and Heffernan and Prendo, and I believe there's one or two, Robbie Fox as well, over there. So it's, you know, it's fantastic for Connacht rugby as well as Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. Wes, do you think that 15, Ireland's strongest 15 at the moment, the starting team that was named on Saturday?
Yeah, I think so.
Bundy. Sorry, Sam was just mouthed Bundy to me. I forgot he didn't start. Apologies.
Yeah, well, I'm a huge Bundy fan, and I think both weeks now it's clear he's had a massive impact off the bench. I think, and again, maybe statistics are proving wrong, but I do think that if you look at the games, I think we tend to play better when Bundy starts. Now, let's, for argument's sake, say that those three center spots are split between, or those two center spots are split between three people. So I do kind of think that most combinations of those three do give you somewhat as strong as 15. So we'll say, for argument's sake, yeah, that is probably a starting 15 when they all fire on their day. James Ryan was a lot improved from the week before, but I mean, I would still maybe like to see someone else given a shot in that jersey. I think it's different with the likes of Ty Byrne, where you see a kind of a shutdown performance last week because he hadn't played rugby since the Six Nations. So it took him that bit longer to get up to speed. But when he was up to speed, dear Lord, like line breaks and offloads, you know, as far as the eye can see. When that front row is going, I mean, our scrum, it's great. Porter with the amazing carries and the two tries. I was so happy for him. But I was also pretty happy to see that front row called in after 60 minutes or 65 minutes, whatever it was. Like, it's good to see the confidence in the bench players to see out that win. Our back rows, as you say, Peter O'Mahony, again, I think on his day, you need that. You need that Bull Hayes, that Peter O'Mahony, that Paul O'Connell, like, in-your-face kind of player to be there. And, like, the best thing I saw after the game was that argument they had with Sam Kane. I don't know for sure what he said, but fans in the stadium said, he said, "Go away, you're only a shite, Richie McCaw." And I was like, you need that. Like he lives for that moment, and you need that. You need that pick country fucker to get up in someone's face.
Apparently, as well, at the end of that, he said, "Lad." So is you're a shit, Richie McCaw, lad. As it, like, they took out the mouth guard as well to really, really hammer home the pronunciation of it too. But even that Westie, it's first of all, it's funny, and it's a bit of edge that Ireland need. But it also, they were camped in our line at the time. It bought us 2 minutes to sort of rest a little bit, because it caused such a ruckus. And I think he does that intentionally. Like, I think that is part of it too.
Yeah, I will caveat by saying, if that was happening at every breakdown of a player with a player, I'd be like, get him off. It's not worth it. You know, you don't want to see that. But like, at the end of the day, as you say, okay, first off, if you want to think kind of cynically, it buys 2 minutes and it kills the clock a little bit. But at the same time, it's also a really important situation. If you take a step back in that kind of altercation, that's a psychological victory for them. You kind of need to rise to it and stay with it, and, you know, kind of show them that you guys are going to fight and keep them out. So, yeah, it was a huge moment. I think, again, obviously Sexton is playing some phenomenal rugby still. There's nothing you can tell me that sees any logic in him starting the next test. Yeah, it'd be fantastic to win two games. And he probably will start the next test. I imagine the same 15 will start the second test. Or sorry, the third test. But I just think it's a waste. Okay, it's a strongest 15. We know that. But first off, we need to have a strong 23. And we need to know that if we don't have our starting 15, we can still play. Like, at the minute, if you were brought into this team in a World Cup quarterfinal, if you were Kieran Treadwell brought in, or Gavin Coombs, or even Joey Carby starting 10, you know you're not first choice. You know you're only there because somebody was injured. So we just need, as I say every time Ireland play, we need to see two or three or four changes in key positions just to get guys' experience, and get guys' experience in the unit that works so well together.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot on social media of the where are the people who said that we want the changes now, you're very quiet now, and all this sort of thing. And it's, yeah, again, I think it's missing the point. None of us have said that Ireland, like, aren't good. No one has said that Ireland 15 isn't good. We're saying is, like, in a quarterfinal, if Sexton's injured and you're giving the reins over to Joey, what are we then? And I don't think at the moment, I think no one would disagree that we're at that stage, we're not good enough to beat New Zealand at this moment in time. Now, again, we could be wrong, but we still want to see it. So I think people are missing the point in that. And would they rather... This is the problem, I think, as well. I think some people would rather this series win over a World Cup quarterfinal win. I think people just don't really put a lot of merit into a World Cup, Rugby World Cup. And maybe that's not true, but I get that feeling that no one really cares about the World Cup as much as we think that they do.
I just say that I can understand that, because I'm firmly in the camp that we should be, you know, rotating in players like Kyrie, and if he's going to be the backup to Sexton, get him in and get him playing. And I think that, like, my personal feelings this series was to prepare for World Cup, and that's why it was probably handpicked to go to New Zealand, put it in the pressure cooker, play the two extra games so that you have short turnarounds, using an entire squad, traveling with a small squad and all that. But then again, you could also say that maybe winning this series in terms of rugby, where these are tests, is more important than getting through the quarterfinal to a semifinal and being like, oh, congratulations, we made it to the semifinal. Like, it's not an achievement to get to the semi-final unless you go on and win it, really. Like, you know, I know it's a big monkey off our back and it's something that you want Ireland to do. But when it all boils down to it, you're still, like, if you're not first, you're last. You know, Ricky Bobby, that sort of thing. So you need to be eyeing up not at the semi-final. You need to be eyeing up, we want to go in and push on and win this World Cup. Because that's, I think, there's no point in getting past the quarterfinal, beating the All Blacks and getting over that hoodoo. It's that, not your mentality. So that's where your priorities got to lie. I can understand the prioritization of this tour because it would be hugely monumental for them. But I don't think it does anything in the long run unless you build on that. And building on that would be to go past the quarters and the semis and get to the final of the World Cup and aim to try and win it. Because if you're talking about knocking the All Blacks out in the quarterfinal stages of the World Cup, why are you not talking about winning the fucking thing? Like, that's as big as a final.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Yeah, sorry. I mean, as in, yeah, getting past the quarterfinal, obviously, to hopefully then go on and win it, yeah. And Sam, if you ain't first or last, I was drunk when I said that. You can be second, third, hell, you can be fourth.
Fourth?
shout out Talladega Knights. Let's talk about the All Blacks, because they were definitely not at their best, which partly because of the pressure Ireland was putting on them. But Westy, we saw a lot of ill discipline coming from the All Blacks, which is, I would say, uncommon, but it's probably common. It just was getting called a lot this game. What was the story there? Why they're just, there were a lot of cheap shots, a lot of just penalties, silly penalties be given away, which really, really hurt them.
Yeah. Look, it was silly penalties, and you know, with the, you know, for the cards, I think we can all agree that they were, you know, particularly the Mac yellow and the Ringrose. That they're appropriate, but if you look at the actual statistics of the game, it was 14 penalties apiece. You know, it's not like they were overly punished and we weren't. But what I do think happened is they tried to get away with stuff early, and for once the ref shut them down. You know, it's like you asked me last week, why do they get away with it? They get away with it because they're led away with it early on to let the game build up. Was Jaco Piper said, he pulled Richard McCaw aside after like the second yellow and said, I'm not doing this all day. Like, talk to your team. Like, this is how it's going to be reffed. I also want to point out, I love the conversation for the Angus Tavao red card. And I'm an Angus Tavao fan. I think he's great for the Chiefs. He used to do a lot of social media stuff for New Zealand, for the All Blacks. And he seems like a great guy. But the conversation Jaco Piper says is, he is never in a realistic position to make that tackle. The position change means nothing. You know, it's all about that body height. It'd be different if he was low and, you know, Ringrose fell and hit him. You know, that's a completely different conversation. With the Mac one, I do see why it could be a red, but I personally am kind of happy that it's only a yellow. Like, if you're diving for a ball, he did realistically go for the ball, and then he's in the air. Like, what can he do? He can't turn. He probably should keep his hands up in the air instead of bracing his shoulder, but he's trying to protect himself. Like, I see it going either way.
He knows what he's doing.
But at the same time, it sets a precedent. Then, I don't know. I just think, like, I think a yellow is fair. It stops players going up recklessly. I don't know. I just wouldn't like to see a precedent set for that being a red all the time. Sure, like, we defended Lever to the hilt earlier in the season when he got a yellow or red for a very similar, and he kept his hands in the air and he actually stopped.
Lever's one doesn't make contact with the head, and we've said time and time again, don't enter something if you can't protect the other person's head. I agree with you. I think that a yellow is probably fair because he is realistically going for the ball. When you look at it on the wide angle, he's going for the ball with the intent of also not getting the ball and leaving one in on Mac. And the fact that he turns his shoulder into his head, that is something. If you can't safely do something, you can't do it. That's my whole mentality. So I can understand a red, I can understand a yellow. It's not the be all and end all, but man, if Mac was out of that game, I was flying to New Zealand and I was kicking off.
But I mean, I think it was one of the great things is that we kicked on early. We scored early, we started well, and we kept the pressure on. And like, we kept the pressure on a lot of points during the game. Even I tweeted and said, I think the 60th minute, the All Blacks, they gave away a scrum penalty. Their heads were down, their hands were on their hips. So I was like, if we keep the pressure on, we've won the mental battle. Now they bring on the likes of Will Jordan and he fucking sparks their attack into gear again. It's outstanding. But what we did was we kept the pressure. We kept our heads up for 80 minutes. And it's key to score early and build that scoreline. Now, there was a time there with the 13 men where you can say that we kind of squandered a bit of an opportunity, but at least we kept the pressure on. If you look at the possession statistics, they're pretty even, but the territory is, we played all of the game in their half, close to their line. And that's what you need to do, is pin them back and keep them there and take your points when they're on off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't their best performance.
You touched on the, yeah, that when they were down to 13, I feel like Ireland, I feel like teams, when they get into that situation, they feel like they have to capitalise now. And I feel like Ireland lost their patience a little bit. We saw, like, off a couple of scrums and lineouts, they went for the juggler straight away. It was one where I think James Lowe knocked it on, where it was like, it was a really nice set piece move, but it was straight away rather than, you know, they normally go a few pods, break down kind of that way, and then they go and make a strike move. And it's, I feel like, I think teams just do it. I think it's like human nature being like, oh, you know, they're down 13. We need to score at least a try here in this 10 minutes or else it's a total failure. And we didn't score in 10 minutes.
I think there was a mismanagement of our attack, though. I think that our attack was extremely poor in that situation. And that needs someone to tell them to cop the fuck on. Because when you're playing against 13, like you said, you try, they do kind of the head rush goes and you go for a strike move or something. But they need to realize that 13 men are going to get tired quicker than 15 men. So you'll actually break them down if you continue to play the way you're playing. I think that that was a poor period in the game plan. And then I thought that when they scored, going into halftime, I said, look, I don't think they'll come back and win it because of the man advantage in rugby being so, having such an impact. But I was extremely pleased with how Ireland reacted after halftime again, like last week and like the Maori game. I was really pleased with how they did it because that poor game management from about 30 to 40 wasn't there after halftime. They kicked on and they did what you said and they played against the 14 men properly.
Yeah. But Sam, though, up until, what, 70-something minutes, New Zealand only had 7 points on the board. That doesn't happen very often. And a credit has to go to the defensive work on the Irish side.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Defence was unbelievable. And defence has been. And I think that there was moments in it when the defence worked as a unit. And then there was moments like, you know, Bundy had a huge tackle, but a really good cover tackle on Rico Ani, who has skinned countless players in his career. Like, I thought he was away. Bundy is not the quickest anymore. You know, he's slowed down in the last year or two. But he managed to get him and he made the tackle. And then Robbie had a huge tackle in the backfield that was stopping a three-man overlap from their 22 that could have been a huge counter-attacking opportunity. So there was single individual moments like that, which were massive and had a really big impact on the game. But overall, it was a defensive game plan, the defensive unit, bit more back to a more structured version of what they obviously were trying against the Maoris. It was very quick, it was very up-heavy, it was in your face, it was leaving the man knowing you made the tackle. It was extremely aggressive, which I think that they did against the Maoris and they didn't execute it very well. There was a bit of, you know, disjoint between the players and that led to a lot of kind of silly discipline and issues and penalties. And then against New Zealand last week, I don't think that it was as evident. And I went, oh, I hope they haven't packed in that game plan and that tactic, but maybe they just weren't able to. Whereas at the weekend, I think a lot of this chat about New Zealand being off the boil and like New Zealand not being very good, I think a lot of that is very harsh on Ireland because I think that Ireland really made New Zealand not that good. You look at the likes of Lester Fanganaku, like second game, unbelievable player. He's going to be a serious All Black. He's going to go on 30, 40, 50 caps, a lot of tries. You see him in Super Rugby, but he wasn't getting a sniff. And that was a big introduction to like, look, now you're playing Test Rugby. It's not as easy. It's not going to come as easy as playing for the Crusaders. And Ireland did that to him because, you know, he will punish teams. He would have punished us if we weren't as aggressive as we were.
Yeah, Doris's tap tackle was just fantastic. That really was a try saver.
Down the fields of Ballina.
Oh yeah, Tom added on under 12s level, I believe. When I gave him that nugget,
he said, "Someday you're going to be playing for Ireland against the All Blacks, and this is going to come in handy, and I'll be in a vest on a podcast talking about it." Is that what you said?
That's almost word for word. It's scary how accurate you got
that. Looking forward to the third test, Westy. I think we already touched on it. We'll probably see a very similar team going for that historic win, but we do expect a bit of a backlash from the All Blacks, I presume.
We do, yeah. In the same way we sat down with and watched the game and had a lot of work on to do, they'll do the same. You know, they're obviously going to review the game. They'll look at where they were weak. They'll look with the big moments of the game. Obviously, I think their discipline, you know, will have to be, looked at and amended in terms of obviously the cards and all that. So they'll improve during the week. But again, we now have the wind at our backs again. Like, we've just beaten them in Dunedin. And we're going on, you know, we have a test series on the line and everyone will be really hungry to get that. This could be, in theory, the last chance an Irish team ever has to win a series in New Zealand. And again, it's the closest we've ever been. And one victory leads to another. We've seen that, you know. We beat them in Chicago for the first time for 100 years of playing them, and now here we are again, 4 from 7 or whatever the statistic is. I don't think there'd be many changes. I'll sit here and say the exact same thing again. I would love to see one or two changes. I'd love to see a change in the second row or the back row or the front row. One change in the pack, one change in the back. So let's just work to a full squad that can beat New Zealand as opposed to 15 or 16 players that can beat New Zealand. Bundy, I think, deserves a start now after coming off the bench so well. But because he's working so well off the bench, maybe that's the best way to keep it. What kind of worries me now is how we're going to navigate this game on Tuesday, because we don't have it. We only have two centres left. So, I mean, I don't know if Ringrose has gone through the second and third HIA protocols. He didn't come back onto the pitch, so we're kind of assuming.
As far as I'm aware, he's not allowed to play himself. No, Mahoney have been ruled out, is what I saw earlier. That might just be Twitter talk, but from what I saw, people were like, what do we do? I was thinking about this as well. I was thinking Earls will probably play 13 outside of Stuart McCloskey on Tuesday.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see who plays that midweek game. And then we might see, you know, if Coombs has another good game, he has a 6 or 5 day turnaround, which, you know, happens in the URC and happens in rugby all the time. So it's not improbable to think that you could still play this Tuesday game. And I'd say that's why it's the Tuesday and not the Wednesday like the first game was. It's play the earlier, a day earlier, and give someone time. So even rotation on the bench, I just think, look at it. People can say that we were wrong for saying we should have rotated, but our point was always that it's about building a squad that can beat the All Blacks, not a 15. And it's at a case now where it shouldn't no longer be a massive special occasion to beat the All Blacks. Now, it will always be a little bit, of course, but they're just another team now. That the hoodoo is gone. If they're just another team, then we should have just another 15 playing, you know, and be able to win with one or two changes.
Yeah, I think both things can be true. I'm excited that we bet the All Blacks. I'm delighted that we bet the All Blacks. I still have major questions over our squad depth and going into a Rugby World Cup. I think both things are true, and that hasn't changed. And going into a Six Nations, we do have an autumn tour this year, where I think it's Australia, Japan, Fiji.
Yeah, coming to Dublin.
So there's still another series where the likes of hopefully Ballacoon. Again, Connacht Wise, Cian Prendergast, lads like that, you'd love to see get again more game time.
Byron Ralston, just saying.
Byron Ralston, yeah.
I'm just fully bought into that he's playing 13 inside Mac by the World Cup. I've decided that's the trajectory. Like, look at Finley, look at Mac. You know, players that grow up in Australia of Irish heritage that come to Ireland are just automatically class. It's my theory.
And we're gonna, you know, forward some documents to make sure Seamus Harry Langton is Irish, because let's be honest, no one's gonna question it. No, not a sinner is gonna question it. But yeah, that's kind of the where I'm at the moment. I'm delighted. I was buzzing at that after the win. I'm still, if Tadhg Furlong, Johnny Sexton, or Andrew Porter go down, I just question what sort of a team we are then. That's all. And that question hasn't been answered, and I don't think will be answered until the World Cup. And that's an issue. We will look at other games that happen as well. A clean sweep for the Northern Hemisphere, which is rare, I would say, and especially after last week where it was the opposite. We'll start with the most probably exciting Wales against South Africa. Wales winning in the last minute with an incredible kick from Anscombe. Sam, I don't think we can kind of stress how amazing that is for Anscombe. Like, a year ago he was, you know, badly injured, wasn't sure if he could play again. I think they had to break his leg more to actually be able to mend it fully. I read that recently, which sounds just incredibly painful. But Wales to bounce back after a heartbreak last week, to come back and win this week. Very impressive from that Welsh side.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, South Africa's not going to ever be an easy place to go, regardless of what team you put out. I saw a little bit of chat during the week about how it was like a South Africa B team. And then I was looking at some of the players and I was going, the fuck are you talking about B team? Like, you have multiple World Cup winners in this team. So, you know, massive result for Wales. It gave them something to kind of cheer about, because it's not been an easy time for them the last while. Like, I know that they win the odd Six Nations and it kind of goes under the radar because they kind of just win them happily and no one really notices because of how normal it seems. Whereas Ireland win them, it's a massive deal. But in terms of their domestic game, in terms of their fan base, in terms of all the things surrounding the game in Wales, it's not been great. So it was a huge result for them. I'd like to say delighted for them, but I'd be talking shite. I don't. I don't like Wales. I don't want to be delighted for them. But no, I think that the Northern Hemisphere teams getting wins in these games the weekend, it was good, because you just don't want whitewash series. The whole thing about these tours is they're under question now with the globalization of the league and the of the entire season, and they're talking about like these sort of tours might not be able to happen. Then there's always chat about it being the end of one season and not in the end of another season, and you're not ever going to play them at full strength. So it is nice to see wins away from home. So now a class result for Wales now, in fairness. And just like that, setting up another series decider, which is great.
Yeah, 100%. England got a win over Australia, 25 points to 17. England are definitely, when it clicks, the Northern Ireland, it looks like it's really, really good. They seem to be really sorting out that Marcus Smith, Owen Farrell kind of duo. I think Farrell is pretty happy to not take a back seat, but kind of to give the keys a little bit to Marcus Smith here and let him kind of find his feet. And there's no doubt, Westy, like, England are kind of on their usual path to looking pretty good. In Six Nations, they'll probably look really good. And then, of course, in a World Cup, they're going to look amazing. It seems to be happening again, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you can clearly see they've been building, like, they've been rotating a squad and bringing players in. I think what you said about the Owen Farrell stuff, I think having Marcus Smith at 10 and letting him take on that playmaker role lets Owen Farrell focus a bit more on being captain. And, you know, I think it was the speech he gave to the players after the game last week, where he was like, get fucking excited now about next week. Like, this is still on the line. Like, you know, and I think that was a really, you know, it seemed like a really, you know, great reaction to have after losing last week. They also, like, and you can see that from the game on Saturday. They came out of the blocks firing. Like, they were all over Australia for the first half an hour before Australia got anything up close to a sniff of getting back into the game. So yeah, I haven't really had any doubt about it that Eddie Jones is working to something. He's not going to, you know, give it all away yet. We're seeing now how their game plan can come back. Obviously, they were always going to bring back the Vunipolas. Like, you're just keeping them out of a team to work on other things and give other players a chance and try different systems. But yeah, with what you would say is closer to a predictable England team, is getting those results a little bit easier and implementing that game plan maybe a little bit easier. What kind of evolution will we see of it next week? Will they go for the full tour? It'll be interesting to see if they go hell for leather again at a win of a tour in Australia. And what will they push on for the rest of for the next 12 months? Because I think they're probably one of the most interesting people to watch at the minute, because when it clicks, it's brilliant.
Yeah, a fit and healthy Billy V is a scary, scary sight, isn't it? Still, like, he's still so impactful.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think that did he get the try, that the first try, or whatever they're saying, that the drop down normally goes somebody else, but Billy kind of pushes him out of the way and takes it and barrels his way through. He's like, no, it's mine. And I wouldn't argue with him.
I think so. I think it was supposed to go to Courtney Laws. I think they were saying that in the commentary, and Billy was just backing upwards with his big ass and just kind of fell over the try line. And it was like, oh yeah, that works too, I suppose.
Just what England are doing really nicely, I think, at the moment, and what Ireland can't do, because we don't have as many teams, but they're building a team full of the various club captains. So there's a lot of good leadership coming from all parts of the pitch. Like, I saw a stat there. It was like, I think it was Owen Farrell's 95th cap, but it was his 36th as captain. So, you know, it's a third of his career as the captain of England. And then you have like the likes of Law, Vinopola, Genge. These are captains of their clubs. So having that sort of leadership right across the team is huge. And I think Eddie Jones is doing that on purpose. I think he's bringing these players in. Sometimes they might not be the best person in their position, and people might be critical of other players in the league playing better but not getting their games. But I think he wants a really strong mentality as well as a team.
Yeah, like, I know it's fun to try and question Eddie Jones, but it's probably not sensible. I knows what he's doing. I know it's really tempting to try and make him look like a fool, but it's not happening. He knows what he's doing, and as I said, he'd probably get results. So
there was a stat when Ireland, it was like, oh, Ireland have now beaten the All Blacks four times, and Eddie Jones has beaten them as a coach six times. It's like, you know, no other coach has done that, I don't think. But it's ridiculous. Like,
he's really annoying, so I get it. You know, I can see both sides here, Sam. I see both sides. Scotland got a fantastic win against Argentina, levelling up the series. 29 points to 16, very convincing. And they seemed very, very impressive throughout. Did either of you guys get to watch this game?
Yeah, I watched the extended highlights this morning. I didn't watch the game live, but unbelievable result. It really played well. It was a great game. So,
I don't think you can underestimate how big that will be for Scotland. Now, obviously, it's a test, but as I said before last week, you don't have your two kind of main guys there in Hogan and Finn Russell. Now, obviously, you still have the likes of Hamish Watson, who we can't underestimate how important he is. But still, to go after last week's defeat, to come back on a bounce back and not just win, but pretty much dominate that game, it can only inspire confidence going forward. And I'm starting to get excited about Scotland. I know we do this every year. I've fallen into the same trap, haven't I?
I think Scotland are doing exactly what we talked about Ireland needing to do, which is building a squad. You know, they've got a team there. They've got a 15, a 23 that just manhandled Argentina at the weekend. And that's a 15-23 that's not their strongest 15-23. They have the two big names there. They also have players that, you know, the likes of Blair Kinghorn that people are kind of questioning, but he's just showing up and showing up and showing up and put his name down. And then you've got players that are growing into it, like Darcy Graham. So I think they've put together a really strong squad. And they look like they're doing what they should have done a few years ago, which was building more depth, because there's no denying their first 15 for years has been competitive, but it's just like that. You can't play week in, week out with 15 players. You have to have 23, you have to have 33, you have to have depth of squad, you have to have next man off the rank.
Yeah, and they also have the best player in the world in Pierre Schumann, you know what I mean? Westy, he'd probably rock a sleeveless vest like you, actually.
Sleeves don't fit him.
Yeah, he is an absolute barrel, a barrel-chested man right there. But that's forgot. We've set up in all four tests now. We have test deciders. So next weekend will be fantastic. We'll briefly touch before we go on the Maori game on Tuesday morning.
You forgot about Georgia's historic win.
Sorry, apologies.
What about USA qualifying for the World Cup?
You're right.
Beating Chile at 1 a.m. last night
with one of the best individual
players
of all time
during a monsoon. It looked like it was half underwater. Or was it a swimming pool? Right.
It was mental. Yeah.
Okay, Westy, talk us through then. Give us you're the tier two guy. Give us a brief. You don't have to go into too much detail here.
It's kind of misleading because Chile scored in the 82nd minute or something to be 1 point down. But it was a great game. They were competitive. It was close. AJ McGinty was on form for USA. Good to see them go through. I think it's good for the sport, especially with them due to host a World Cup in 8 years, 9 years. It's good to see them still involved in the World Cup. Part of me would love to see Chile go through. I just like the way they played rugby. They did see a yellow, so they were down 14 for a bit. Probably had the negative impact on them. A team like that's just not really going to have, it's not going to be the same as like when you get a yellow, you know, like, or even a red, let's say in tier one international rugby, where like you're fit enough to cover the man. Like these guys they're working off a smaller pool of less experienced guys. But Chile will now go down to the repechage. So I think it's Chile and Portugal, and I don't know who the other team is. In other tier two news right now, there is a African Cup final, I think, has just kicked off between Namibia and Kenya. I watched Namibia Zimbabwe last, I think it was on Wednesday actually, and that was a pretty feisty affair, but Namibia fairly ran away with it in the end. So seen Namibia in a fair few World Cups. They almost beat us back in France a few years ago. But yeah, I always like to see a new team get in, which is why I was kind of like hoping Chile might get through, and then America go on to the repechage and they win that easy enough. Or see Kenya go through would be pretty cool. And as Sam said, we had Georgia beat Italy for the first time, their first ever win over a tier one nation just a few hours ago.
Get them in the Six
game.
Nations now.
it does start to give people that chance to talk, because one thing that people said when we were talking about, when it's always been banned around to having promotion relegation playoffs or making it a Seven Nations stuff, and going, whenever Georgia play Italy, it's never close. It was, well, now you've got an Italy team with Tommaso Allan Garbisi, you know, Canone, that they had a decent squad out, and Georgia had it. And if you looked at the pictures from it and the videos of it, it was a good sized stadium. Atmosphere was unbelievable. It looked like a great day. So I'm absolutely delighted for Georgia. It was a huge result. And I think that those sort of big giant killings are massive. It's not as much a giant killing, but I remember Namibia lost to Uganda last year in the African Cup, and that was a giant killing there. So you want to see these sort of giant killings. And in Pacific Island news, you had Samoa beating Tonga, so that was another big result. It was not the most recognizable of Tongan teams. The Tongan team that played the week before against Fiji, which they got battered in, but That was a much stronger team. But no, I said rugby just nonstop all the time. And when you have a baby who gets you up at 7 a.m, you can just tune into a World Rugby website and watch games. It's class.
Or if you're just a rugby freak like Westy who watches Namibia play.
Okay, I've got nothing else to do.
You do have other stuff.
I could only afford one night of Westlife. I couldn't go both.
Yeah. Obviously, former guests Paul Mullen, Luke Carty, very much involved with that USA effort. Paul starred, I think. Luke, I don't know if he came on, did he? He was on the bench. I know he's on the bench. So fantastic for them to get to a World Cup. I hope America become good at rugby. I think it'll only be good for the sport. Delighted for them. That's thank you for the recap, lads. Appreciate it. We'll touch briefly before we go, I said, on the Maori game. I think, though, this will be short. We all want to kind of see a pretty much similar team that started the Maori game beforehand, 2 weeks ago. We want to see them give another chance. A Frawley at 10. This is the whole point. This is you can't have one bad game and then never get another bite of the cherry. So I think we'll give him another run out. Prendo, hopefully he's another stormer of a game. I think that's pretty much covers it, right?
Yeah, excited because Moses Sullivan played brilliantly for the Maoris the last game, but he's not starting. Josh Morby, who had a stellar season for Hurricanes, is making his debut for the Maoris. So and TJ Perenara starting as well this time. Ruben Love on the bench. So it's a strong Maori team. It's going to be really exciting. I'd like to see something similar to what we saw at the last Maori game. I would like to see Coombe involved for 50 minutes, but I'd like to see him in the match day squad for next week because I think he does just add that go forward that we are still missing. Even though we beat the All Blacks, it was elements of times when you were like, you just love Coombs to just barrel over someone there. But Frawley, yeah, Frawley's definitely going to get his chance. Harry Byrne sent home with injury, poor chap now. Like it's a long road back for him. I think he needs to be just forgotten about in terms of the Irish question for a long time and just let him just develop his career again from scratch because it's too much pressure on him and it's gone to his other leg now as well. So Frawley should be starting. You'd like to see that. They might want to get a bit of time into Joey's legs, but I think that'll be a silly thing. But yeah, between the two of them, there'll be game time and then as much opportunity for players to showcase their worth as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're getting live score updates here, Wesley. So Namibia 15-0 up, it looks like.
Yeah, 15-0 up, and then Uruguay are also playing Romania, and I think they might have just scored, but at the minute the only score I see is 17-3 to Romania, which would be it's a pretty cool game.
One thing I know, and it's everyone knows this, but you do not want to give the Namibians a 15-point lead. That is one of the common things in rugby, they say, is you do not want to give the Namibians a 15-point lead. All right, boys, we'll leave it there. I hope everyone enjoys the sun. Get out there, enjoy it, obviously, after you listen to this podcast. Hopefully may it continue.
Listen to the podcast in the sun.
There you go. Crack open a few beers, crack open some 0.0s if you're driving. Please
pool
drink
party
responsibly. Yeah, pool party, I don't know. But make sure to cover your shoulders up. Definitely do not wear sleeveless vests unless you are Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's all. That's the rules. That's as simple as that. So apologies for that, lads. All right, boys. Appreciate it as always. And we'll be back next week to hopefully recap an Irish win in Wellington. Cheers, boys.
Bye.
Cheers.